and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk Lean Spec series. I'm Cindy F. Solomon, delighted to be with you. I'm from Startup Product Academy, and I'm host of the Global Product Management Talk, this series. You can follow me at Cindy F. Solomon, and my blog is at startupproduct.com. I'm here with Malcolm Knapp, delighted to be with you again.
Hi, I'm Malcolm Knapp. I run the Engineer Accelerator. It is a professional training program for hardware engineers who are looking to gain professional skills to be effective in their career. And this is part of what we go through in that program. We're extending it out beyond hardware into other domains.
And we have been engaged in this series of talks, making it transparent as we develop what I think is a very powerful, not only a training tool, but a process for product management and product managers to use. We're calling it the Lean Spec. It inherently requires a cross-functional approach to identifying what we know and what we don't know about the product before we invest in the expensive aspects of the build. On the other hand, it can also be used to deconstruct a product that's in play and still increase the efficiency of the cross-functional process.
Yeah, basically it can, if you're developing a product, it can tell you where you're at, how much has been developed and how much is remaining, and give you a sort of idea about, you know, are you 10% done, are you 50% done, are you have blocking items or major showstoppers or anything of that in the way.
And it also empowers product managers to not be in reaction mode, because no one tells a product manager generally, here's what we need you to do and here's how to do it. You have to come with your own set of tools. As well as generally product managers, in my experience, have brought in too late and when there's a fire or a problem or a bottleneck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it can help product managers figure out where the issues are. It can help facilitate the different team members, you know, and figuring out how to synchronize those team members together.
So this is sort of like we're looking at how do we get here? What came before? And the other thing about the Lean Spec that is very powerful is that it's not only software. And so much of what's happening in the product management media, if you will, is all about digital products, applications, and software. And yet product management exists in every type of product. And clearly hardware now in the IoT of things increases the complexity of building products.
Yeah, so one of the things we're trying to do with this series is actually sort of see how this process maps over to different domains. It's coming from the sort of hardware, firmware sort of domain, and sort of seeing what are the similarities between, like, you know, web stuff or digital, you know, mechanical and so forth. That's what we're sort of talking about. What we've been sort of going through for the next little bit, started last week, is talking about the different skills that you also be, you know, need to know to run through the process. And last week we talked about sort of learning how to view sort of information about a product in a sort of hierarchical fashion. Instead of a lot of times people talk about products in sort of bulleted lists or paragraphs, and those are accurate, but they're not that expandable, and a lot of times the most important information is very hard to find. And so by converting that information and starting to view products or to view the information in a hierarchical fashion, it starts bringing out those issues much easier, bringing them to the surface much easier.
So you're referring to the aspect of the Lean Spec that is the documentation of what the quote-unquote product definition is.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's interesting. It is a documentation format as well, but it's also a way of thinking. You know, the documentation matches the the most sort of, I think, a powerful way of thinking about a product. You know, we were saying before is that a lot of approaches only capture some aspects. You know, one, you know, there's multiple aspects to a product, and when I was going through this, I saw that a lot of times it was incomplete, and also that they only captured one or two. You know, they didn't capture all the aspects you need to know to sort of fully describe a product. And so this sort of hierarchical list is sort of what I call the sort of feature list, and it just talks about the features. In of the product, or the functionality of the product, and the characteristics of that functionality. But it's only one aspect to it.
Right, and currently, if you are deeply involved in product development and product management, everyone has their own, what I'll call the WIITM list of what's important to, what's in it for me, product areas that my job is to focus on. Mm-hmm. And this is enabling a holistic view, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's why I see it as their purvey of the product manager, not to own this, but to use this as a powerful tool to align everyone with where the product is going and what the thinking behind it is. But thank you for underlining that this is way more powerful than just a process and a tool. This is an orientation. This is a point of view. This is a way of operating that brings everyone together and hopefully does away with the political issues that often happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's part of the thing is state issues or that come up in terms of a design conflict. And then it's up to the managers or the team leads to resolve that conflict. But it's because you're saying the lean spec is supposed to be a reflection of what is going to be built.
It's a reflection of what we all agree
on. Yes, and so that means that if there's a sort of mismatch between this, image of the product and what people are actually talking about, then that has to be resolved. And the product manager may not be the person to, we're not going to command this is what has to happen, but they can point out that there's a conflict or a sort of a place that where things need to be synchronized.
Well, the product manager could bring in data to justify different points of view.
So anyway, we were just talking about that when you have you're pointing out an issue, a conflict between a part of the project. What you can do is you don't have to solve that. What you ask is you ask the two people who are involved in that, the two groups, to work it out amongst themselves. And that means that you are not the direction, you're not fighting someone else's authority. Two team leads, most likely, who have equal authority, are working it out between themselves. And this may go badly, but it's also, that's their job. That's their job, is to sort that out. It's not your job to sort it out. And if it doesn't get worked out, then you can bring it up again. You know, you can say, this is still hasn't been worked out. I still have, we were saying before, red text in the, there's still a placeholder for this issue. I've gotten no word about what the decision is. And so you come back around again,
Right. And here we're discussing the product manager as a facilitator.
Yes.
Not, because generally the product manager doesn't have authority to make these decisions.
Yeah.
And that is the most powerful strategic place to be as facilitator, bringing the right people to the table, discussing the right things to forward the product.
Yeah. And so this is the lean spec and the documentation associated with that is all about helping, you're having an accurate reflection about what's going on. So we were also going to say, I want to sort of add into this, is that there's another part of another skill sort of associated with this sort of the feature list or the functionality of the list is about this learning about the amount, sort of a specificity you need to talk about when you're talking about the lean spec. A lot of times people will talk about functionality in very vague terms. And this means that it, you know, it's sort of hard to, that's something that's sort of unbuildable, basically. Sort of, you know, one of my sort of things, because I'm coming from hardware, is that there are LEDs a lot of times to indicate sort of simple things. And a lot of times you just have a couple, that's all you need to indicate all the stuff you want. But when people talk about, we're going to have an LED, you know, LED interface on the product, you know, you can't build that, you know. But it's like, we're going to have five LEDs, and each LED will mean these things, and what, you know, and blinking will mean this, and solid will mean that. That is actually specific enough. But of course, you don't have to go further than that. You don't have to choose the part number, for example, or you don't have to like say it's going to be this voltage or anything of that sort. You can just say, here's the number and here's what it means. And that is the sort of, so part of what you're doing as well is you're organizing the information and then also separating it out from being too vague or being too detailed. I mean, you get to the detail eventually, and sometimes you have it, but you just say, we're going to push that, we don't have to pay attention to that. Right now, we'll sort of save it, but right now what we're looking for is this, again, high-level sort of synchronization. I like to call it product-level refactoring. It sort of helps you see how you can simplify the product at this high level, rather than when you're in the low-level weeds, you end up sometimes there's really odd results at the sort of, you know, when everything comes together. So the code may be beautiful, but the user experience may be odd. So I just wanted to add in that as sort of an additional part of this sort of hierarchical ordering of information and sort of learning how to view that. It's also learning how to sort of know what level of specificity you need to be, you know, talking at. And that's definitely something else we'll get into in the course.
And that raises the appropriateness of having the QA people, sitting at the table or listening in, or certainly having access to this document, but even the technical specification people, the technical documentation, if that kind of thing still exists. Does anyone even write readmes anymore?
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing, is that it's very, part of what you can end up with is acceptance criteria, for example, in your lean spec, you know. This is where, you know, when people are talking about products and stuff, the only way you know it's working is if it actually passes the tests, you know. And, you know, again, a lot of people will, like, make their thing and they say, but they won't know if it's working because they haven't figured out how they would test it. And so it's not set up to be tested in any specific way. So, again, it's one of these sort of where you can either have them in or have a bilateral conversation. Once you have your functionality sort of listed out, you can sort of go to the QA people and say, here's what we're thinking about. How would, you know, add your 2 cents in? How would we test, you know, what is your key value pair? You know, like, you know, what is the test of this can be added in as an extension to the lean spec.
It also occurs to me that architects, industrial engineers, anyone who is building huge hardware projects has to have this process. They have to be trained on this process to some degree. Perhaps it's not a cross-functional process, but anyone who's in the business of providing outsourcing for companies that want to manufacture a product, they have to go through all of this in order just to price what their services are going to be, as well as the cost. What's the cost of this going to be?
Yeah, so the thing is that, you know, again, one of the things about, you want a documentation that's extensible. So this does, in the end, lead into manuals and stuff like that, we're going to get into sort of behavior descriptions and how things how products act through time. But if you look at that basically, you know, part of the thing is you turn on, and then the user has to know what will happen, you know. And so you can actually see how this, you know, it's written from a engineering perspective, so you do have to adjust things, but the sequences you come up with are the same sequences you could see in a manual just as easily, you know. And so, you know, this is, so, you know, that's potential. That's a potential extension of it as well. Now, you know, this is where things, you know, you have to be careful because projects are long and things change, of course. So, you know, saying something's going to be useful at the very beginning, right at the very end, is made things may have adjusted. But the idea of this, of treating something at this level of specificity, eventually you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to figure out, you know, if you didn't do any of this lean spec process at all, you would still have to figure out how many LEDs you use, you know.
Yeah.
And at some point, you know. And so the question is, do you want an engineer who knows nothing about design making that decision, or do you want the designer and the engineer and the product manager and the CEO or whoever else making that decision? Because I was sort of thinking about it as like, you know, user experience or experience of a product is a sort of the gestalt of the hardware, the software, and the design. It's this sort of, it's not intrinsic in any one part. It's this whole experience together. And if you have an engineer making decisions about number of LEDs, that directly impacts design and directly impacts usability and all this sort of stuff like that. And a lot of times they are, it's by default because they're in the room. They're there and they have to make a decision, and so, and they do. But it may not align with the vision of what the product should be.
And it may not be elegant or...
Yeah, so I mean, whatever the vision of the product is, you want the product you're making to align to that vision. And if these decisions that, you know, the number of LEDs seems like really specific, but it's really, it's directly impacts how the user, experiences the product. LEDs are not a lot of information, and so I mean, I remember spending, you know, how many LEDs you need? You need 6 or 8. If you put in 6, you need 8. You end up with a really weird, like, well, if it blinks fast, it means this, and slow if it means that, and people get, that confuses people, and so forth. And so, you know, in some ways it feels like you're going too far, but because these decisions are actually higher in the hierarchy than it looks, it means that you want to make them sooner rather than later. So, you know, this is again coming back to specificity. And I think that's one of the big missing pieces. When I'm in my experience, is people really, they have a lot of good ideas, and they may be specific about one or two parts of it, but they're not specific about the complete product. So. So this is another skill. This is another thing to sort of, there's no hard and fast rule to it. Part of the thing about the structure is that it's just text, and so you can write whatever you want in there. There's no compiler to yell at you. So it means that you can adjust, you know, the information that's in there to your needs, you know. Write down whatever you think is important.
Well, which brings up the hierarchy of the information.
Mm-hmm.
What do you put first, or how do you list it, is there a prioritization of what comes first?
Yeah. So for me, it goes sort of part of what you're trying to define is the edge of your product. You know, if you talk about a phone, people say the phone is the product. But actually, the phone is the product and the charger, you know, because it won't work without a charger. And yes, it may be an off-the-shelf charger. It could be just something you buy. But when you open up a phone, it doesn't come with just the phone. It comes with the phone. And then there's also, is the product the packaging that it's in? Is it the labeling on the outside? You know, there's a lot of this sort of stuff about what is the product, you know. And especially now that all this sort of has software and hardware, there's a server side, that's part of the product as well, you know. And so, you know, what you're trying to do is, you know, you want to sort of work from the product level, working down, and you work down from there, basically. So the way the words that I use is that you have the product is sort of the highest level, that's sort of the overarching thing. And then you can have sort of characteristics to that level. And that's sort of all the issue, things that apply to the whole product, like the weight of the product. You know, it's not like you're not going to break it down any further than that. You can say it's going to, I don't want it to weigh more than 5 pounds, you know. Then below that, then the sort of the device level. And devices are, this is again the word I use. It's just a grouping of the lower level in that, which is I call features, is sort of the functionality. And a lot of times features are things I call sort of, they're basically things that don't change with time, you know. And at least in hardware, this works quite well as a mapping. I mean, one of the things that, like I said, I'm interested in to see how well this maps to other domains. But you can imagine, you know, in a mechanical process, the different assemblies are the device sort of things, and then the assembly is made up of parts. And so, but the, and the parts are sort of the atomic, the things that don't break down further, you know. And so for an hardware product, it could be the processor, for example, it could be a feature. And then the features have characteristics to them as well. So, you know, and this is what you want it to be, you know, have. So how many, you know, I/O do you need? Does it need help, you know, does it need, is it being really fast? Is that important or not? You know, it may not be, but then that's really useful to know, because then it's used when you're actually then sourcing these parts, you don't have to use that as a criteria. So, again, that may seem specific, but if you don't, you know, the speed of your processor impacts how much graphics you can put on the screen, which impacts usability. So it's maybe a really, it sort of seems low level and seems engineering, but there's a feedback between that that functionality or that what's technically possible to what experience you can get. And so that's why you getting down to this level of specificity is so useful, is then you can start seeing the interaction between these sort of parts. And you can start seeing how, you know, well, we need to indicate that there's an error, you know, there's an error condition. So we'll need something on the, you know, well, what do we do when the battery runs out of power? You know, this is a really sort of obvious example, but, well, you need to have, you know, it's turned off, like, or like, you know, you want to indicate that somehow, you know, maybe you put an LED, I mean, this actually, my phone actually has an LED on the side showing that it's out of power. Does not use the screen. It uses the screen saying, I'm almost out of power. When it's really dead, that LED goes red, you know. But that LED had to be chosen to put in there to be part of the user experience, you know. So that's an example of, you know, it may be, does it seem redundant? Well, in a certain cases, that's all you get. Like, you don't, the screen's off because there's no power. So, you know, again, and that's sort of how does things behave in time. So that's a separate question. But as you can sort of see, so then you sort of recap. You have product level, device, and then feature, what I call feature, functionality. And, you know, and the devices are grouping. You can divide up, you know, your features any way you want. And that's sort of the hierarchy. That's sort of talking about this.
Yeah, so for old school product managers, I'm hearing this going, well, that's a product requirements document. Yeah.
Well, and but, so, but and that's... So this is the interesting thing for me. That may be the case, but what my impression about product requirements documents is that they were either not specific or too specific, you know.
Right. Well, and was a bad product manager. No offense.
Yeah. Well. So.
They weren't working. They were doing their job, but they weren't working cross-functionally to include. The other people involved.
Yes. Well. So. This is the thing. Is that this is a response.
Or was a starting point.
You know. And so this may. You know. This is the interesting interplay. Is that, well, I just didn't see people doing this. So maybe it's very similar to what people have done before.
Well, or you were in technical organizations or working for technically focused products that didn't appreciate the value that product management or didn't have a product management discipline embedded in their organization.
But the thing about this is this maps directly onto the experience of the product.
Yes.
The product requirements document is a technical, it's sort of a technical description a lot of times, and it didn't do this mapping from
across engineering and design.
And just as you say, it was a product requirements document. So you saw this, but we're going to get into it. There's other aspects of the lean spec this is it's real information. So there's some useful, but it's incomplete. And this is one of the biggest things that I saw is that, you know, they had these lists and they were fine, but they don't capture all the aspects of a product.
Right, because I would say in my experience when I was doing a product management product requirements document, it had a business focus. It mm-hmm. was justifying the requirements in response to the market. Mm-hmm. In response to getting the go-ahead for mm-hmm. resources to be put behind this product. So it was a starting point. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the thing that was used to document the alignment mm-hmm. across the board.
Yeah,
it was generally left off as once the product went into development.
Yeah, so the thing is that there's a feedback loop, right? Just as I said, well, if you have this processor and not that processor, then you can have this much graphics or not. That can feed back into this.
Right.
Whereas a product is like requirements document, a lot of times doesn't, it's like, here's what we're
it's
doing.
It's static, right.
And then you're done. And
right.
So,
because the product manager has to go on to something else rather than staying within.
Well, it's just sort of that you want, there is an interplay between what you want to do and what you can do. And by doing this level of specificity, it means that interplay can be revealed.
And it also means that the lean spec is a live document.
Yes.
It's not written in stone, mm-hmm. and it's a useful document. It adds a level of transparency. It guarantees an alignment, and mm-hmm. it also gives a history. Mm-hmm. If there's good version control, mm-hmm. but it's a process and orientation. And it's a tool to increase efficiency.
Yeah. So it's the thing is that the lean the documentation is not in some ways it is a result, but it's by creating the documentation you create the design at the same time, and whereas the product requirements document wasn't the product.
Right.
You know, it was an output that someone made, and it was. But it's not,
silo.
Like I said, the lean spec is about reflection of what you're building,
excellent.
What you will build, and the product requirement was not the product.
Right.
You know.
It was a justification, and it was done in a silo.
Yeah, and so the thing is that you're trying to have something that captures the information at there's this nice thing about at a high enough level that you don't get bogged down in the details, but at a detailed enough level that you actually can build it. And that's where the skill comes in. You know, that's what you're learning how to do, is to sort of figure out where that is, because it's different for every product. It may be different for, you know, some products is really important to really nail down the processor really early on, and sometimes it's not. But so the level of specificity may change depending on what you're doing. But you know that's what you can adjust it for that reason, and so part of what this is about is creating a system that is useful. You know, it's not about creating words or creating a huge thing that proves you've done work. It's about you use it, and if it starts bogging you down, then you adjust it so it doesn't.
Right.
You know. So.
And so it's not adding. Something else that the product manager has to do. It's enabling the product manager to do what they're tasked with.
Yeah. And so the thing is that, you know, you could imagine writing a lot of this stuff down in like your, you know, notebook or on an email or all this sort of stuff like that, that this stuff would get captured somewhere.
Right.
But, you know, you might as well organize it at the beginning versus at the end, you know.
Right.
And so the idea is that the moment information starts coming in, you start organizing it immediately, because, you know, then you don't have lost stuff. You can capture it right away, and then the organization then leads you to better questions and reveals things that are unclear from the beginning. I like to view design not as a sort of checking off the boxes, like we've done this and done this. It's an exploration process. You don't know all the information you need to know to build a product before you start building it. If you did, then it would already be in production, basically.
Right.
You know. So by definition, there's things you don't know.
And there will always be until the point in time when they're critical.
Well, but that's the thing, is if you are viewing the design process, and this is the sort of as an exploratory process versus a check-the-box execution process, then you are looking for those unknowns, you know. And it could mean, this is part of what the Lean Spec is about, is that it feels, you know, you're not doing code. You're not, you know, jumping down into making the board, you know. So it may feel like you're not making progress. But the idea is that the moment you've revealed one potential showstopper, you have made, you know, you've saved, you know, you made 3 months of progress that day, you know. Because if you encounter it later on, it'll be a 3 month delay in the project, you know. And so the idea is that part of the thing you're getting with the Lean Spec is sort of the resisting the urge to jump down and into the low-level details.
And also to stay out of reaction mode.
So you can, and so that when you're doing this early on enough, then you have time to adjust. You have time to adjust your business model, because it turns out that the bill of materials is, you know, a time and a half more expensive than you thought it was going to be. Or that it's just, you know, the complexity is much higher than you think. So, you know, this process reveals that stuff earlier rather than later.
And would you say that the Lean Spec is aligned with this current popular trend of minimalism?
I think that it's interesting. I think that the Lean Spec can be as big as or as small as you want it to be. It could be a half page long, so long as it's complete. It doesn't, there's no length that it has to be, or it could be 20, or it could be however long it needs to be. And so I think that, you know, one of my interesting things is to see how this maps over into code side stuff or web things, because the cycle times are so short. The thing is that there's still architectural decisions you have to make. There's still things that will live on beyond this A/B test or that, you know, short iteration. So it's one of the things I'm sort of interested to see how it changes. So I think that there is a place for it. So I'm just sort of interested to see where that is. I think that a lot of times people do this sort of, you know, they're doing it already maybe, but just not with those names, or that they're not realizing they're doing it. And I think that, you know, it, just as I said, because of this sort of the interaction between the different domains, that's where the power comes in. If you're doing websites, it could be that the technology is so standardized already, the user interface is so standardized, you know, all this sort of stuff. It could be that it's just that you've the number of unknowns is so small that you can sort of get away with it.
In an ideal world, but no.
But, you know, probably not.
Works,
you know,
with, you know, the web designers, you know, and manages web project. No, it's highly customizable.
Yeah.
And there's many different approaches to arriving at the same results.
Mm-hmm.
And the client or the person who is funding the project doesn't really care about the technicalities of it. And often what they are envisioning is very hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very clear in their mind what it should look like.
And so
they have no idea how to arrive at it.
And so that's great. I mean, that's exactly what the Lean Spec is all about. It's about translating this vague vision into something that can be built. Specifically, and that specificity of some sort, you know, and again, it's a high level, but you want to be specific, and then you can say, the thing that you want maps to this thing that we're going to build. And then if you want to change it, well, then it's going to cost this much money and this much time, you know. And so you can then use the Lean Spec to explain in terms that, you know, people may be able to understand, translate technical issues into schedule and time, and schedule and budget. And that may be easier for people to understand why, you know, when you say it's hard, what does that mean? So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Malcolm, and I look forward to bringing in other people to continue this discussion. And by the way, shout out, we're recording from the Port Workspaces at Kaiser Mall in Oakland. Thank you to the Port. Thank you to the Port Studio. And thank you to Tech Liminal for supporting these efforts. And this is really has come out of the Tech Liminal community of people that we are techies and makers. And so thank you, Malcolm.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Okay. Cindy Solomon, we'll see you next week.